I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Do you notice changes in your loved ones at this time of the year? Are they more short-tempered than usual? Acting a bit, well, catty? Biting your head off at the least provocation? Well, cut your pets a break. The holidays are stressful for them, too. For those of us dealing with pets who are a bit more ornery or high-strung than usual, Dr. Wayne Hunhausen is here with some tips and advice for recognizing when your pet is stressed and what you can do to keep your animal companions and yourself sane. He'll also share some words of wisdom for those of you who will welcome a new pet to your home at Christmas and how to find a qualified, dependable vet. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Many households hang stockings for each member of the family, and for many, that includes their pets. As thoughtful as that is, though, how many take time to consider the impact all the holiday hustle and bustle has on their animals? Christmas is not the best time to give a pet as a gift, but there will be those who end up with a lap full of kitten or puppy this December. Some of them will be first-time owners, so how do they find a good veterinarian? Dr. Wayne Hunhausen of the Westwood Animal Hospital on Rainbow Boulevard in lovely downtown Westwood, Kansas, is back with us again. And Wayne, always good to have you here. Happy holidays to
you. Happy holidays to you, too. Great to be here, Steve.
Well, this time of year, obviously, is so stressful for many of us, Wayne. Do pets tend to pick up on that?
Yes, depending on the pet and their temperament. It's just kind of like us. You know, some people are more stressed out by the holidays than
even
others.
Even pets are like that.
Even pets are like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of commotion going on and a lot more opportunities for them to get into trouble also with Christmas trees and packages and food and visitors and all.
Yeah, our routines change, strange people in the house, and pets are quick to notice all that.
Yes.
You don't think they do sometimes.
Yeah. Some of them respond certain subtle ways. They might withdraw a little bit or eat a little bit less. Others may be very stressed out. For instance, cats, one of the problems we see around this time of year, whenever there's a lot of commotion, is some cats stop using their litter box or start spraying urine because they're so stressed out.
So you see this quite often this time of year.
We see a variety of problems popping up around this time. Dogs that are maybe more reticent or shy, and all of a sudden there are all these strangers invading the house. Sometimes they don't deal well with that. You might get pets that start to withdraw, or some pets that become a little defensive because they don't know what's going on, and they might snap or growl a little bit. And so you just for the pets in the holidays, you've got to kind of take a look at your pet and its life experiences and what type of temperament it has, and then make the right decision for it. And for some, it's just to set them aside in a quiet area. You know, when people are over and during Christmas parties or when packages are being opened, sometimes the best place for a pet is in a quiet room in the house, maybe with a special toy to play with or interact with, or special treats in there to kind of keep them busy and not have to deal with the hustle and bustle. And one thing, a lot of people are proud of their pets. We love our pets. We want them to be part of the family, and we want to introduce them to everybody that comes over. But some pets don't want to meet everybody that comes over, and they're better off, you know, taking it easy. Maybe later on during the visit is a good time for some of the pets to meet the visitors.
After people have been in the house for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because folks are sort of intruding on the pet's territory here, right? That's sort of the psychology going on here.
Yes, that can be. I mean, you can have pure territorial issues where the dog feels like the home's being invaded that triggers maybe a protective response. But for others, it's not so much my territory, it's just my life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just too much going on that I don't know about.
So how do pet owners need to anticipate this, and what advice do you give outside of the quiet room? That's a good idea, but if you want your pet to be part of the celebration, then what?
Well, if it's a young, exuberant pet, I'd plan on trying to give it a lot of exercise before people come over. You know, take it out for a run or a long walk or whatever to wear it out a little bit so it's less reactive and less likely to jump up on people. Issues like jumping up and being rowdy, those can be worked on. You can shape that behavior ahead of time by practicing sit-stays during greetings every time somebody comes into to the home, or anytime you open a door and greet the pet. When you go from one room to the next, have it sit. So it's sitting over and over again, and that becomes a ritual. tool for interacting with people.
And so that trains them and some discipline thrown into the mix and everything else.
Yes, yeah. that can be real helpful. If the pet's not having problems enough where you want to confine it away, then get Kong toys or the other toys you can load up with food so that if you want to sit down and visit with your guest, you can give the dog a toy or they give the cat a toy that's rolled around and little treats come out. Just kind of like if there was a child that would be bothering you when you're visiting with guests, you'd give it a video game or a doll or something so that in this case, the dog can go over or the cat can go over to the side of the room and engage in something that doesn't involve bothering guests.
Well, certainly things can be tough on the pet, but it also can be tough on visitors, right? Visitors who don't like dogs or cats very much.
Sure. Right. We talked about understanding the temperament of the pets, but we got to understand the personality and the tolerance of visitors. And some people, they're not dog people and cat people or pet people, and they don't want some big Labrador coming up and slobbering all over their nice Christmas outfit. And so another thing that can be helpful, another just management issue, just use a leash on the dog. You got a dog that tends to be a little rowdy, keep it on a leash a little bit more often. Or if it's on a leash, tie it near the chair that you're sitting on so it can't go over there and suddenly jump up on somebody or knock a food platter out of somebody's hands.
Yeah, so if your pet tends to be good around people normally, there's no reason to think they wouldn't be good around lots of folks at Christmas time, is there?
Unless there's a lot of noise and commotion. So there are a lot of issues and stimuli, and a dog can be fine around people during quiet visits throughout the year, but having a bunch of grandkids over or people are noisier, maybe have imbibed too much, they might not tolerate that too well. Keeping them calm with the exercise, providing this toy distractions. Another thing to think about, there are pheromones. For dogs, there's a pheromone product called DAP, and for cats, there's a pheromone product called Feel-Away. And on some cats, pets, these have a calming effect. That might be something else you can use. It's actually the DAP for dogs is available as a collar the dog could wear through the season to help it be a little bit calmer.
So Xanax for dogs and cats.
Well, it's not – pheromones aren't quite Xanax, although that's a possibility. There are some dogs that are so stressed out, even if you put them in a quiet area, they can hear what's going on and they bark and they whine and they carry on. I don't throw drugs at every behavior case that I see, but there are some pets that it's almost a welfare issue to keep them calm in situations like that, and drugs like Xanax and Valium and even sometimes Prozac can be real helpful.
I was going to say, if you decide to put your dog or cat in a quiet room and deal with it that way, if the dog or cat isn't used to that kind of situation, then you're maybe biting off another issue altogether, right?
You're exactly right, and that goes back to your initial question, how do we plan ahead? And if we think that a separation during certain periods is going to be an important part of having people over, get the pet used to that earlier. Mm-hmm. And so what I would start by doing would be in the evening when it's nice and quiet, give the pet something to chew on or a toy that's full of food, something to engage it, and leave it by itself for 5 or 10 minutes and gradually do that for longer and longer periods.
Dr. Wayne Hunhausen is our guest. He's with the Westwood Animal Hospital, and he's an expert on animal behavior. If you have questions about your dog or cat or really anything else, give us a call, 816-235-2888. We're open for business. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR. I'm just wondering about, we've talked for years on this program, Wayne, about how to find a good veterinarian. Are there any good reliable sources or organizations for finding a good qualified local vet?
There aren't any organizations or groups or websites that evaluate vets dependably. There are some websites where people can
That's always pretty.
Yeah, you really to do a good evaluation for a professional or anybody with technical skills, you need to have somebody that has similar skills themselves. For the most part, I mean, it doesn't mean a pet owner can't evaluate a veterinarian and evaluate care, but to evaluate somebody that's really doing it right and using the most sophisticated technology and doing good workups and providing necessary care. Ideally, you would want to have somebody with a background that knows what's going on. There really is nothing like that that's dependable where you can go and get a good evaluation for veterinarians. The best way to do it if you're coming into a new city or moving to a new area is make friends with people that have pets that have the same relationship and care for their pets the same way you do, and get some recommendations from them. That'll give you a starting point.
So word of mouth is
word of mouth. Yeah, word of mouth will help out. then if you've got four or five veterinary clinics in the nearby area, then you can go and visit. That would be the next step. You might just stop by and buy a small bag of dog food or treats or some vitamins or something like that, just kind of spontaneously and see how clean the place is and how you're treated there. And then if you narrow it down a little bit further, then you want to actually, you know, visit and call and find a time where they're not overwhelmed with appointments. And any good veterinary hospital, when they have the time, is going to want to show off their practice and how they treat patients and give you a tour. And that'll give you a good time to talk to the staff as well as the veterinarians and just, you know, I just start out with just general questions. What kind of pets do you have? You know, where did you go to school? What did you like best about the school you went to? Do you have anybody on the staff have any particular skills, or are they board certified in certain areas? And that'll give you a good feel for, you know, how the person runs the practice and what their care is about people as well as pets.
And what if you have a need for a specialist, say for a bird or a reptile? How do you find the right one in that case?
Well, in the Kansas City area, there are three specialty hospitals, and they provide specialty care as well as emergency care. And so that would be a good place to start looking for board-certified specialists. There are some board-certified specialists in private practices if the practice is big enough or in an area where they can support a specialist in that area. And those people have all had advanced training. They've passed boards.
Like specialists, what do they do? What do specialists do?
We have veterinary endocrinologists, surgeons, internal medicine people, radiologists,
really?
Oncologists. We have just about every specialty in veterinary medicine now that you have in human medicine.
Man, that's just amazing to me.
So that's where I would start is contacting one of the area specialty hospitals, or we're fortunate to be in between two very good veterinary schools. A little bit further to travel, but there are certainly specialists at Manhattan, Kansas, at the K-State Veterinary School, and in Columbia, Missouri, at the University of Missouri Veterinary School.
Yeah. We have one email here about, what about caring for keeping birds calm at this time of year for bird owners out there?
For birds, unless it's a real socialized bird, and usually we're talking about some of the larger citizens, probably the best thing is to find a quiet, draft-free room of the house.
Yeah.
For birds as well as for our mammals that are pets, a little background noise can help out too. So a quiet room, maybe it's a little classic music, KCR in the background, and something soothing, not people yelling at each other about politics.
Yes.
Some environmental enrichment again in that space. And there are a lot of great bird toys and that birds manipulate to get food out of, and that are very stimulating. So keep them in a quiet area. Keep them distracted. Mm-hmm. Usually it's going to be less likely to make the choice to involve them with the guest than with dogs or cats.
Well, it is no surprise that we have lots of phone calls here for Dr. Wayne Hunt. Hunhausen. Again, our number 816-235-2888. You can tweet us at KCUR up to date, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Let's go to Mick from Raytown. Mick, you're on up to date with Wayne Hunhausen. Good morning.
Hi, you guys. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, Mick.
Allergies in Labrador this time of year, are they possible? He's licks his paws quite a bit and scratches around his shoulders.
Yes, allergies are possible any time of the year. The most common allergies are the plant allergies, the pollen allergies, which peak the big season is late summer, early fall. The second season is early spring, late winter, when the tree pollens are in the air. But if you have a pet that's allergic during the winter, then you start thinking about other things a pet might be exposed to. Could be house dust, could be mold. Food allergies are actually pretty common in dogs and cats. A lot of people don't realize that. If it's just the winter months, then you've got to think about, well, what is the pet likely to be exposed to in the winter? It could be things that you bring out during the winter, comforters, maybe down or wool or other things. It might be things that get pulled out of the attic that might have certain types of dust or mold on them that you might have out as just rugs or other things during the winter. If the pet's licking all year round, then you've got to think about things it's exposed to year round, and that could be a certain type of food that might be house dust and so forth. For the dogs that are allergic during seasons, they can usually be treated with Benadryl or maybe some other medications 2 or 3 months at a time that are safe. If the dog's allergic year-round and if it's really severe, then that you want to think about a visit to a veterinary dermatologist. We have some very good veterinary dermatologists in the area, and they can work up a case. And sometimes skin testing might be part of the workup, just like for people, to find out exactly what the dog's allergic to and what it needs to be desensitized
to. What about the danger, Dr. Hunhausen, you know, salt on the streets this time of year, that kind of thing? Does that get tricky for some pets?
It can be a problem.
For their paws?
It's more likely to be a problem if you have a dog with long hair where they're going to pick up a lot of salt and there's going to be the contact. It's going to get stuck between the digits, and you can have irritation from the salt there, physical irritation because it's kind of sharp, or chemical irritation. And if the pet's licking off a lot of it, there can be some gastrointestinal upsets.
Okay.
One more question, please.
Yeah, sure.
What's the personality trait when they bow down in front of you like they're it's almost like they bow.
Yeah, front end down, rear end up. That's a play soliciting behavior. And that usually means that the dog wants to engage in some kind of play interaction.
He wants to go on a walk all the time.
That certainly could mean he wants to go for a walk. And dogs are smart, and they're very good at learning what types of things get them what they want. And if the dog did a little bit of play bowing and for whatever reason he got a walk after that, then if you respond to that signal, then a dog will get very good at using that signal to tell you what he wants. Yeah.
When I put my shoes on, he's on my feet.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mick. Have a nice break. Yeah, bye-bye. Why do the dogs do that, get down on their low on front and keep their rear ends high? What's behind that?
It's pretty much a species-specific genetically controlled behavior. It's something that's evolved over time. You know, I don't know exactly why it started, but you see that in wolf behavior, some other wild canid behavior, and certainly in our dogs. And it's just a signal. It's a way of communicating that the dogs have evolved to use to say, I want to play.
I recognize it just by the way you're describing it. 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. Terry from Independence with a question about a cat. Terry, good morning.
Good morning. About 6 months ago, a stray kitten showed up in our iris patch. He's about 8 months old now. And then about 3 months ago, we got another cat. These are both males, and this other cat that we just recently got is about 7 years old, and we've had them together for about 3 months, and there was no aggression until about the last 6 weeks. Now the older cat has been so aggressive toward the younger cat that we're fearful for the younger cat's safety.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a dilemma. We've tried several things suggested by pet behaviorist, and I'm just wondering what your suggestions you might have, Wayne, please.
Mm. Okay. Did this come out of the kitten wanting to play with the older cat too much? It's about an age where I see that type of problem.
No, not really. The kitten goes off by itself, and the older cat literally stalks him wherever he goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can they be in the same room at all at this point without the older cat wanting to attack the younger cat?
No, the only time is when they're eating. We thought that was kind of strange. Any other time, they can't be together at all. We keep them separated completely.
Okay.
When we feed them.
Okay, and so if you bring the cats in the same room, that older cat immediately focuses and wants to go after the younger cat.
Immediately, yes.
Okay. All right. The first thing is just manage the environment so the older cat has no opportunity to do that, which you're probably doing right now. So you keep them separate at all times. And then you've got to have a plan to get the cats together very frequently where they're relaxed and good things happen. And usually what I recommend is using food. And so what I would plan on doing is as often as possible, is there somebody else at home that can help you with this?
Well,
or are you by yourself?
No, my lovely wife.
Okay, great.
And I'm off a lot, but we tried that already, feeding them several times a day, just our treats, and then they do great when we feed them. But it's immediately afterwards that he starts stalking the kitten.
Okay, well, in taking that approach, what you want to do is you allow them to eat or take treats together for maybe 10 or 20 minutes, and you can make the cats stay at the food bowl longer if you smear the food inside a large bowl instead of just feeding it a couple of chunks of a canned cat food, which you can eat much faster. But the key is to remove the cats from each other as soon as they're finished eating, so that they're, during that session or at the end of the session, there's no aggression at all. And then the idea is to gradually allow the pets to stay in the room longer and longer. Now, that doesn't work with all cats. And if your older cat is hell-bent on attacking that younger cat, that might not be a solution that's going to work, or it's not going to be practical because it's going to take too long to gradually increase the time they spend together. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then somehow we've got to bring the arousal level down of that older cat. And there are two ways of doing that. One would be pheromones, like we mentioned earlier, feel away. And it comes as a diffuser you can plug in the wall. Feel away contains synthetic analogs of naturally occurring facial pheromones. And in some cats, it's very nice for calming them down. Doesn't work on all cats, though. If it works, it's great because you don't have to give the cats pills. It's real safe. If that doesn't work, then you're probably going to have to talk to a behaviorist to help you fine-tune the behavior program, but also to get the cat on medication. And with cats like this where the aggressor cat is really focused and we can't distract it, usually I'll use drugs like Prozac or Paxil or Zoloft, and that allow the cat to be non-reactive enough, not because it's sedated, but just because it affects the chemicals in the brain, so it's not reactive, so we can start getting them in the room together for play and treats and stuff more often in longer periods without attacks. And then once they're doing well together, you wean the cat off the medication. So that might be an important tool in your case.
And how do you spell that light you mentioned?
Feel away, you mean, the pheromone?
Yes.
Feel away is F-E-L-I-W-A-Y. And it's available
from... F-E-L-I-W-A-Y.
Yeah, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y. Okay. Available from many veterinarians and some pet stores and on the internet.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck, Terry.
Yeah, good luck, Terry.
Yeah.
All right.
Merry Christmas. God bless
you
all.
Same to you, Terry. And, Terry could buy dogs instead of messing around with cats.
Why dogs?
Dogs answer all problems, right?
That would mix everything up if we added a dog to the mix.
Let's go to Susan from Kansas City, Missouri, with a problem with an excessively barking dog. Tell me it's not true, Susan.
Well, she only barks when I'm at home.
Mm.
When I'm gone, I have it on my upstairs neighbor said, you know, she never barks when you're gone.
Do you bark, Susan?
Oh,
you're not exhibiting bad behavior here, are we, Susan?
This is family radio. We don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, she only, and it's like she'll sit on the end of the sofa and look out the window, and if she sees people or a dog, then she barks. It's kind of like she wants me to know they're out there, and she wants them to know she's there because maybe they'll come play with her.
Hmm. Okay. Can you pull the shades on the window so she can't look out?
I do that at night when she's barking at that doggy in the window.
Okay.
But honest, it's like she hears them. She will hear things blocks away before I see anybody. And she's out. Well, I have an enclosed porch. She sits on the porch with me a lot. And I won't see or hear a thing. And she'll be letting them know that she's there.
And are you in an apartment?
I live in a duplex. It's a first floor thing. Okay. It's kind of like a house.
Okay. All right. Well, the principle on addressing this is fairly simple. What you want to do is have an effective way of interrupting the behavior every time she barks, something that's humane but appropriate and effective. And you also want to reward the behavior that you desire, which is quiet behavior. Okay. So one way of approaching that would be to choose a device that makes a sharp or novel noise that will interrupt the behavior. That when you make that noise, the pet will stop and go, ooh, what the heck was that? But not scare the pet. We're not looking to do any damage to the pet's temperament. And things that people use sometimes would be shake cans, like peanut cans with a half a dozen nickels in them. You might use a whistle. You might, with dogs that are really loud, you may use a little boat horn or compressed air horn. But whatever you use as be
that scare me.
Yeah.
Really?
But the key is to pick something that's appropriate for the pet's temperament. Stops the behavior but doesn't scare it. And then what you do when you're home is you keep the pet near you, and every time it barks, you interrupt the behavior. And what you'll notice is as the evenings go by, you'll notice a pet there'll be more and more opportunities or situations where the pet orients to something it sees or hears. You can tell it's heard or seen something, but it hesitates and doesn't bark, and then you give it a really, really good treat. And you just keep doing this over and over again until the pet learns that when it hears or sees something that it responds to, it has two choices. It can either bark and hear something it doesn't like, or it can be quiet and get a treat. And eventually you'll see that quiet behavior decreasing. Now, that's kind of a commitment to watch the dog that close and interrupt the behavior every time. And so another solution that works nice as an interrupter is an anti-bark collar. And I wouldn't use a shock collar, but there's a collar called a gentle spray collar. When the dog barks, it emits a citronella spray, which is very benign. It doesn't hurt the dog's eyes or anything like that. But what you get is the dog barks and it goes, psst. There's this loud hissing noise and a strong olfactory marker. It's very effective in stopping barking, but very humane for the pets. And then all you have to do is look for quiet behavior.
And where does one purchase those?
We carry those at the Westwood Animal Hospital.
Oh, well, are not very far from me.
There you go.
So,
I like those real well. But it's really important if you use a collar like that, that you're also keeping the treats around so you can reward quiet behavior. If you're rewarding that quiet orienting reflex very often, then you're more likely to be able to get that collar off at some point.
Yeah, she loves her treats.
Good.
And Susan, I agree with everything Wayne said.
Yes.
Thank you, Steve.
Appreciate
that
vote
of confidence.
Merry Christmas to you, mate.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Susan,
bye-bye.
Good luck. Thank you. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with veterinarian and animal behavior expert Dr. Wayne Hunhausen of the Westwood Animal Hospital. We'll talk a little bit more about how to cope with very cold weather that we all know is probably just around the corner. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's sit-down with Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James, you can find it and all of our previous programs online at the new KCUR.org. Tomorrow we take a look at an upcoming exhibit at the Nelson Atkins about the art and architecture of World's Fairs, and the book doctors share their top reads for the year. Join us for that conversation tomorrow. Today we're visiting with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. He's an animal behavior expert. All kinds of good ideas to how to handle your dog and cat. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org. Well, Wayne, people bundle up in wintertime. Should you bundle up your dog or cat, too? And I know sometimes cats don't want to be bundled up in any kind of way because they're cats. People shouldn't buy cats. They should buy dogs. But that's another topic.
Oh, you're going to get a lot of email.
I know I am. Here they come. I'm just kidding, folks.
And you'll deserve every bit of it.
Yes, that's right. But should people be bundling up dogs and cats this time of year?
Cats, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But dogs, it depends on the dog. And if you've got a dog with a short hair coat, if it's older, if it's frail, if it's thin, if you'd like to take it for a pretty good sized walk, then yes, you'll. I think put a nice little polar fleece vest.
How about hats?
Probably hats, not so much. I mean, yeah some dogs. It depends on what the dog will tolerate, and certainly you lose a lot of heat through your head. We do. I'm sure dogs do too.
Okay, dumb question. How about like mittens or something like that?
Actually,
it's so cold on those.
Actually, boots can be important for some dogs. Mm-hmm. Dogs are really active. Some of these big dogs like to get out there and walk for long distances, and especially when we've had maybe just a little bit of warm weather and then cold weather, and you got that sharp ice out there.
Mm-hmm.
So the boots can protect the dog from ice. It can keep it from getting salt between its toes,
right.
Give it a little more traction, keep the snow. Some dogs with a long hair coat, I had a dog years ago that had long hair, and we used to do a lot of cross-country skiing together, and he would pick up snowballs between his toes, and I'd have to pick the snowballs out of there, so boots were real helpful. So there are reasons to put boots on dogs.
Okay, it happens, right?
Yep.
Okay. Back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Heather from Leawood, who says that you gave her some advice 6 years ago, Wayne, and it worked. Heather, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Heather.
Hi. Well, I was walking my dog the other day, and I thought, you know, I never called in to thank him for that advice.
Ha.
My dog used to be aggressive whenever he would see someone approaching me.
Mm-hmm.
Or another dog, he would lunge on the leash and be very aggressive. And you had given me the advice that whenever I saw someone approaching to have some very delicious treats and just treat him as we walked by.
Hmm.
And, you know, I did that for a while, and I didn't really see any, you know, significant results, and he just was horrible. And so I thought, well, I'll do that again. And now, and whenever we walk, the minute he sees someone, he immediately looks at me.
And
instead of lunging or being bad, he immediately looks to me, and I immediately just pop some treats into his mouth. And it has really, now we can actually walk by someone on the sidewalk, whereas before I would cross the road, and I still cross the road just to be safe a lot of times, but it has really changed my ability to walk him around my neighborhood. And so I thought I would call in and tell you that, because for other people who have the same problems with their dogs, you just really need to keep doing it and keep doing it and do it for years, and it just changes them. So thank you.
Well, thanks so much for
yeah, you're
for
so
calling.
Nice to call, Heather. Yeah,
I really appreciate that. And, you know, that approach, and you described it very well, is a pretty simple approach. We're just making a positive association with people that approach to replace that anxiety or protective behavior that causes the problem. Now, the real key on getting it done right is to give that treat well before the person gets so close that the dog, you know, starts to become reactive, and then practice over and over again. Practice is so important for any type of learning. And unfortunately, most people in situations like that want to use some form of punishment. And their dog acts aggressive or lunges towards people or other dogs on walks, one of the first things they want to do is put a pinch collar on the dog, and they yell and jerk the dog around. Some people go as far as putting shock collars on the poor dog. And what is that dog learning? It's learning to be more nervous about people approaching. And in some cases, you actually will get rid of the barking and growling, but make that dog more likely to bite when it finally gets the person finally gets close enough. So the positive stuff, man, that's the way to go whenever you can.
Heather, how long did it take?
You know, once I started doing it consistently, it didn't take long at all before all of a sudden I noticed he was looking to me. And that's when I realized, before I go on every walk, I really need to have a pocket full of treats. But I will attest to the fact that when I kind of gave it up for a while and I went back to just sort of snapping his leash whenever he was getting aggressive towards someone, the behavior did get worse.
That's
and he got much more aggressive. So I will attest to that. So you need to go back to that positive reinforcement and stick with it. And I like how you said, do it far enough in advance. I mean, I really keep an eye on who's coming down the sidewalk. And before they get too close to me, I am just popping little treats in his mouth the whole way as we walk past that person. And even though I don't say hi to the person, I'll smile to the person. They see that I'm working with my dog's behavior, and we get by nicely and comfortably, and it works out well for everyone. So just for those people who have similar dog behavior, absolutely, I would say go with the positive reinforcement over time, consistently, and you're going to see results.
Heather, great phone call. I'm sure glad you made it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Excellent.
Happy holidays to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Brian from Lee Summit. Brian, you're on with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Well,
fine,
thanks.
Fine.
Good. I have a question about my dog. Pretty much the same problem that Heather was having. Every time I take my dog out for a walk, she sees a squirrel or a rabbit or even another dog. Sometimes, like, she gets pretty aggressive. She wants to pull on the leash, you know. My friend had he offered to give me a shock collar, but I was like, no, I don't want to do that. And I've been trying to find other methods to get her to calm down a little bit.
Yeah. The key is when you have a certain specific stimulus that causes unacceptable behavior in your dog is to identify what the stimulus is. It's pretty obvious. You know what the stimuli are in this case. And then secondly, identify the distance where the dog starts to go off, and then you start your training beyond that. And so if the dog is fine at 70 feet away from another squirrel or a dog or whatever, but that when you get to 50 feet, it starts lunging, then what you want to do is look for the things that trigger this behavior. And as soon as you walk along with the dog, as soon as the dog sees the stimulus, but hopefully it's 70 or 80 feet away, you have it sit for a treat. And then maybe you repeat that in 5 feet, but you turn around and go the other way before the dog goes over that threshold. And then with time, that threshold gets closer and closer, and you're able to approach these stimuli more readily. Now, the problem is if you have a dog that has a long distance threshold, maybe it's 80 or 90 feet, and you're walking in a neighborhood where it's really difficult to avoid other dogs or squirrels or whatever, there will be times where the dog is overstimulated. It's not going to sit or take that treat or listen to you. And in that case, what I found real helpful is to use a head halter, like a gentle leader head halter. And it fits on the dog similarly to a halter on a horse, where the leash hooks onto the halter below the jaw area instead of behind the neck. And it's a very humane device. It gives you a lot of control. And if you use it right, it won't allow the dog to lunge at all. And that will give you more opportunities then to reward good behavior.
Okay, so you can get those at Petco or anything like
that? You can guide those at pet stores. We have them over in our training center, but there's several of them out there. I like the gentle leader myself. A Halti is another one, but I like the way you can fit the gentle leader. It also comes with a DVD, which is really helpful in teaching you how to use the device.
Okay. Yeah, and that's how she is, like you said. She's, you know, from far away. She'll spot it out. She'll be on it, like, you know, from 80, 90 feet. So.
Right.
Hey, good luck with it, Brian. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Happy holidays.
Bye-bye. Right,
you too.
How about some holiday do and don'ts here, Wayne? I mean, lots of extra food around the house at holiday time. That can mean, you know, more food for your pet in the form of leftovers like pumpkin pie, I'm guessing turkey and stuffing and who knows what else. What advice would you give for all of that?
I think if you have a healthy pet, a little bit of lean meat set aside, like some white turkey meat for cats or dogs, as long as they're not allergic to it or anything, I think that's perfectly appropriate to allow them to participate. Meats that are fattier or spicier or foods that have a lot of carbohydrates in it or things that different vegetables the dog's not used to getting, those might be problems, might cause the dog to have or cat to have loose stools or vomit. But I think a little bit of lean meat's fine. But
isn't it pretty common for dogs and cats to gain weight in the wintertime? Less exercise, you know, all of that.
Yeah, just like us. And that's usually the problem. Less exercise, but eating the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and some dogs it's worse than others. So I think it's a good idea, especially if you're on a pretty heavy exercise regimen with your dog, doing a lot of hiking and so forth during the summer, and you pretty much shut down during the winter, then you've got to take that into account. Watch the dog's weight. Get your hands on its ribs. And if it looks like the ribs are disappearing a little bit, you know, cut back maybe 10 or 20% on what you feed during the winter months.
And what do you do if you give your dog has too much pie?
If the dog has, and that's a good question, if he has too much pie, whether it was your choice or his choice,
exactly.
One of the problems will be that your dog can have loose stools. Mm-hmm. And in that case, what I'll usually do, if the dog's acting fine otherwise, if he doesn't have a painful belly, if there's no blood in the stool, if he's able to keep food and water down, he's bright and alert, then I will fast the dog for about 12 to 24 hours, less for a small dog, more for a large dog. So allow the gut to rest and then put it on a bland diet. And you can actually use lean turkey meat or chicken or boiled hamburger. So you've got a lean meat and you mix that one part meat to about three parts cooked white rice. And then you can feed small amounts of that anywhere from 3 to 6 times a day for a day or two. And the fasting and the small amount, small feedings throughout the day of a bland diet like meat and rice like that will often settle the intestinal tract down. Once you stopped having the diarrhea, then over 2 or 3 days gradually get back to the regular diet for the dog. But if it shows any other, can't keep food and water down, it's got a sore belly, it's lethargic, gums are pale, any other signs, call the veterinarian or call the emergency clinic and have that pet seen.
We're talking pets, dogs, and cats with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. You want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Dan from Midtown. Dan, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
I had a question. First off, I wanted to say that I've used Dr. Hunhausen's puppy training program there at the hospital, and it's just great. I want to just say how great I think Donna is.
Oh, Donna's excellent.
But I did have a question. I have got an 8-month-old puppy, and I'm about to bring in an 8-week-old puppy. So I'm looking at what kind of preventive pre-socialization type techniques I should employ.
Okay. What are the breeds of the two dogs?
They will both be Shiba Inus.
Okay. And the older dog...
What is a Shiba Inu?
It's a fox-like dog. They're tan in color.
A small version of, like, the Akita.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're Japanese.
Yeah, they're a little more stoic than a lot of other dogs. They're sweet dogs, though. They're very cute. How's the older dog with other dogs?
He's actually very... you know, like sometimes they say Shibas will be antisocial. Mm-hmm. But this guy is really, I mean, he's very interested in other dogs. He's very interested in other people. We go to the dog park and people say how, you know, how he is, you know, such a sweet little guy. You know, he likes to play a little rough, which for most of the dogs that are bigger than him, it's not such a big deal. Mm-hmm. But I would say that would be the only thing that, but he also plays with, you know, small dogs and seems to kind of counter that rough play.
Excellent.
Fairly well.
Okay. All right. So that's great. You've done a good job. You've gone to puppy classes. You've taken him in the area, so he socializes with other dogs a lot. That's really, really good work. And so it sounds like our biggest concern might be that he plays too rough with a puppy. And what I would do would be, before you introduce them, probably try to have a plan, if possible, where you really exercise him hard to kind of wear him out so he's got less energy to engage with a puppy. I'd also keep a leash on him. I'd put a leash on him so you have some control. I'd keep the leash loose, though, not a tense leash, real tense. And I would assume that from what you've told me, he's probably going to sniff that puppy. He may even want to play right away. You might see some play bows and so forth. And then it's just a matter of, I think, until the puppy's old enough and big enough, maybe for another 6 months, where it can really handle itself well. You'll just want to supervise. I would keep a leash as a drag line on the puppy or on the older dog quite a bit so that, you know, let's say you're watching television or reading and the two dogs are out and they're kind of playing. If the older dog gets a little bit too rough, it's a lot easier to grab a leash and pull that older dog back if necessary. And then the concern is the temperament of the puppy. Another situation we have problems with, the young puppy gets to be about 8 or 9 months of age. Sometimes the puppy can be really overwhelming for the older dog. Now, since we're talking about a younger adult dog or an adolescent dog, that's less likely to be a problem than if you had a dog that was about 9 or 10 years of age. But I just think that keeping the other dog, older dog, exercised real well, using a leash as necessary and close supervision, I think they're probably going to work things out well on their own. What you want to do, though, you might anticipate problems like competitive aggression problems, especially as the puppy gets older. You could see some growling or aggression around, possibly around food bowl, rawhide, greenies, things like that, maybe a really favored toy by the older dog. So I'd feed them separately, not let them have rawhides together or things like that until you get a better feel on how well they're doing. And then anything that you think might be a hot object, introduce these slowly one at a time.
All right. Excellent. I really appreciate all your expertise.
Yeah. And get that puppy into puppy classes. I'm sure you will. Yeah. That's important, too, for socialists. Yeah.
Good luck, Dan. Let us know how it goes, okay?
I will. Thank you.
You know, Wayne, in the past you've talked on this program about the wisdom or lack thereof of this idea of introducing or buying a pet at Christmas time and, mm-hmm. and adding that into the family mix during a very chaotic time of year. You're not really big on the idea, and why not?
Well, there's, as we talked about earlier in the program today, there's just a lot of commotion going on that sometimes they get lost in all the shuffle. It's a time, since usually you want to adopt around, unless you're adopting an older dog, maybe from the shelter, which is a good idea to consider. Mm-hmm. But if you bring a puppy in or a kitten in, it's during a real sensitive period of the pet's life, and mm-hmm. all this commotion could be traumatizing for the pet. And what I think is a good idea, let's say that the children are old enough and you'd like to have a surprise kitten or puppy for them for Christmas, a better solution is to get a little stuffed kitten or puppy and put a note on it that within in a couple of weeks you're going to replace that with the real thing.
Right.
And so there's something there. They've got something to look forward to. You've got something under the tree that they can have and hold. But you've given them the expectation of getting that pet in a few weeks or so. Also, that gives you some time to talk to them about what their responsibilities are going to be. But I think, it's best to postpone it until after things have settled down.
Okay. Well, with Christmas times, it might be a tough time, and having a new baby might be a tough time to deal with a new dog or cat, too. Maria from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Hi. We just had a baby. She's about 4 months old.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We have two dogs, and one is a Shih Tzu Lhasa mix, and he's pretty dominant. And he's been kind of marking his territory in our house, but we can never catch him in the act. So it's hard for me to know how to prevent that.
Okay. Now,
when a dog marks his territory,
Well, that, my question was going to be, do we know it's marking, first of all? Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes that's hard to tell with male dogs because they lift their legs just as normal voiding behavior. And sometimes usually you get an idea if there are recognizable situations that the dog responds to. So in other words, by marking. So in other words, if you're in the kitchen, you hear the dog barking at a window, and then you come in there to find a wet spot on the side of the drapes, that's probably marking. Or if somebody comes over and visits, dog normally does well, but somebody visits for the weekend, and then you find the dog is marking their bed or their suitcase or things like that, you find urine there, you know it's probably marking.
And the dog does that, why?
Well, there are a number of reasons why a dog lifts its leg and leaves a small amount of urine. It provides an intact animals. It provides some information about how they are, their availability sexually. It provides some territorial information. It is a way of familiarizing the animal, putting kind of like, you know, putting up photos in your house makes you feel more comfortable in your home because you have things around that surround you that you know. It probably serves that function. In some animals, it's probably no more than a manifestation of stress. And just like you were really stressed out about things, you might get so stressed out one day that maybe you kick the wall and you put a little hole in it. You're not trying to communicate. Necessarily communicate with somebody. It's just a manifestation of your frustration about a situation. And so that said, you have an idea that it's marking, or could it be that has he ever been house trained completely?
Yes,
he's been.
Like 3 years old.
Okay.
So we haven't had this problem before, but it'll just be like we come downstairs and we see it, you know, sprayed because he is a male, so it's up like on the side of the chair or something, and we're like, ugh.
But do you know that, is there anything that there was any major stressful change in his environment that preceded this, that caused this, or do you have no idea?
Well, just us having the baby is the only thing I could think of.
Okay. All right. I would go back to some basic puppy training as well as addressing a marking issue. Which means that the first thing with any kind of house training is that the dog's not allowed the opportunity to do it. Which means he needs to be within eyesight 100% of the time or confined to a small room or a crate, but some small area where he's not likely to mark. Okay, because every time he does it, that makes behavior more likely to occur. So that's the first step. It's just basic house training. I would go outside with him whenever you can and give him a little treat outside after he finishes to reinforce that behavior. I would clean up the odor around the house where he's eliminated and then places where he's gone real frequently. I would put a food bowl down there. And I would, whenever I feed him, I would feed him there, or you could leave a water bowl there. I would give him treats in that area, leave his toys in that area, to change the function of those areas to eating and play instead of eliminating. So that can help out.
Okay.
And then if it's some of it's probably training, some of it may be marking. But if it's just mainly training, he relapsed for some reason on his training. If you can do that for about 3 months, that might get him back on the right track. Now, if we have an emotional issue there, maybe he is stressed out about the baby. Then things like a special set aside time for him where you're getting a lot more play. He's got new toys to push around like Kong toys and stuff where you put food in them. He's getting more walks. You teach him a new trick or you play fetch with him. There's many things you can do to provide mental stimulation and fun. You want to do that. Anytime you walk in the room with a baby, say, here's what's your boy or girl?
A girl.
Girl. Yeah, say here, you know, whatever the child's name, say, here comes Sally, and throw a treat to him. So he looks forward to having the baby around. And try to make things as much fun as possible to work against that stress.
You know, Rick called in to ask Maria, have you let the dog smell or lick the baby yet?
Yeah, yes, they have. Okay. Been around her, and they seem interested. So
Is he showing any signs of stress around the baby, avoidance or anxiety or whining or things like that?
No, I mean, he was a little nervous, but it seems like he's gotten more used to her being around. He also does this at our in-laws' house. They have another dog, and we left him with them for a couple days while we were gone, and he peed all over their house, too. But I think that's because there was another dog. Around that he didn't know.
I think the plan is go back to puppy training, keep him with an eyesight, reward the right behavior, protect the areas where he soiled before, do some environmental and social enrichment, and see if that doesn't get him back on the right track.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome.
Maria, thank you. Let's grab one more call from Susan from Independence before we leave today. Susan, go quickly if you would.
Oh, it's a long one, but I mean, it's not long. The answer, I think, will be long. My niece has a new puppy,
and he was separated from a fairly large litter at 5 weeks, and he's now 2 months old, and he's still crying all night. And so it's caused quite a few problems for my niece because she needs to work the next day. And so I didn't know if you had any basic things I could pass on.
I'm sorry. How old did you say the dog was now?
10 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
10 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Where's the dog kept?
They tried to keep it in one part of the house at night so that they could sleep. But now I think the puppy is in... Well, no, I think they're still alternating to take care of it at night.
Okay.
So they're keeping them separate.
If it's possible, if the dog's calmer when it's in the same room with them, they might move to the crate to that room. But if it still vocalizes in there, then that's going to be a challenge. You might try the pheromone I mentioned earlier, DAP. It's a nice, safe thing. You can get it as a spray. Spray a little bit of it in the crate before the puppy goes in there at night, and that may help out.
All right.
I don't have more time to go into it, but I would give that a try.
Susan, good luck to you. And Wayne, always good to have you here.
Always good
Thanks
to be here.
Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. That's Dr. Wayne Hunhausen of the Westwood Animal Hospital. You'll find more information about our guests, our program. It's all at kcur.org. Be sure to join us tomorrow. We're talking about the art and architecture of the World's Fair, plus the book doctors will share their favorite books of the year. Our theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Luke Martin, Danny Alexander, Maria Carter, and Suzanne Hogan. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.